Good afternoon, everyone. I'm coming to you live from Dickinson College. My name is Jasmine Lopez, and if you've heard my podcast before, I will be giving another review on another film called Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, also known as Ieri, Oggi, Domani by Vittorio De Sica. This film is a 1963 film, so it's a little bit dated, but definitely still brings up some of the themes that we face in society today, and I'll get into talking about that in a second. So, basically, this film, in under 2 hours, this filmmaker, De Sica, managed to create three different scenarios for us. So he split up the film in three different parts. So they were each 30 to 45 minutes. I can't exactly remember how long they were, but he created three different scenarios, titling them 1, 2, and 3 with the main character's name. The interesting part about the film, however, was that he used the same actress, Sophia Loren, who everybody knows, she's a famous award-winning film actress, to depict several issues that Italian society was going through in the 1960s. And if you know anything about this time period, you know that this was a time of industrialization in the north, and a lot of the south still being held back by not being able to advance as quickly as the north did. So he depicted issues of love, sex and desire, economic class, all in under 2 hours, which was super impressive. And he was doing this in a time period where these things weren't discussed, they weren't addressed, and people weren't really paying attention to the fact that women were being marginalized, put to the side, while Italian economy was on the rise. And so I imagine you're watching lots of movies as you're doing homework, maybe hanging out with friends, maybe while you're shoving down a snar sandwich down your throat before class. But I am actually in an Italian cinema class that meets on Monday afternoons. And so we are tasked with watching a film every week that has to do with female representation in Italian cinema. So the film takes place in three locations. The same way that it was split in three different parts, each part was taking place in three different locations. So the first one was took place in Naples, the second one took place in Milan, and the third one and last one took place in Rome. If you've been there, you know how different the three are, if you've been to any of these places or all of them. I actually spent my time studying abroad in Bologna, Italy last year, and so I actually was able to visit these three places, believe it or not. So I spent my time in Naples basking under the sun and eating Neapolitan pizza. In Milan, I was chased by pigeons in front of the Duomo di Milano. At least that's what I remember. And in Rome, I threw pennies into the Trevi Fountain and actually ended up finding one of the best panini that I've ever had in my entire life around the corner from that place. So each city had a different persona. And like I said, they were all played by this award-winning actress, Sophia Loren. And they all shed light on how the women evolved over time, or how the figure of a woman evolved over time, but also on how Italian society responded. And by Italian society, I would specifically mean the men. The film also addresses human values and ethics throughout, all in a comedic fashion. So it was very easy to sit back and just watch the film, laugh at things that I can still relate to today, and also allowed us to reflect on how far the Italian society has come in terms of economy, in terms of gender representation, etc. So first, the first one, like I said, took place in Naples, and it was called Adelina. So Adelina was the name of the main character, and she was a street trader. So she was selling bootleg cigarettes on the street every day. She would go out there, and there's even a scene where all of the women selling things would line up, and then when they would see the police, they would all pick up their things, including their little tables, and would run away. So, as what happens when you're selling something illegally, she is sentenced to prison. And so the lawyer tells her husband, his name is Carmine, that according to the law, a woman cannot be put in prison when she's pregnant, and she cannot be put in prison 6 months after the delivery. So you can already see that even in lawmaking, you know, women were the ones to take care of the children. You would never see someone taking a paternity leave. The man was always the one to provide for the family. And so she would have to stay home and be the caregiver. So Adelina and Carmine start, you know, they start doing some things to have one child and then another one and then another one. And all of this was to avoid imprisonment. But after their last kid is born, I think it's the seventh one at this point, her husband is burned out. He just literally, you can see it in his face that he cannot make love to her anymore. He just feels like it means nothing to him anymore. And he just keeps having children and he keeps making love with her so that she can have more kids to avoid going to jail. This also shows there was a part in which she goes to the doctor with him and says, listen, doctor, like, we want to have children. And he just, you know, he can't have kids. He's just not doing what he has to do, if you get my drift there, to make sure that we can procreate. And the doctor tells her, like, no, like, your husband, Carmine, he's burned out. You have to give him some time to rest and time to relax and rejuvenate. And obviously that can't happen because she needs to have another child. She needs to be pregnant. And the way that she proves her pregnancy is by going to a doctor and receiving a certificate or letter of sorts that says, that's a proof of pregnancy. So when the cops come to arrest her, she just hands them the letter. And time after time after time, she's handing them these letters showing that she's pregnant and that they can't come back until at least the baby that she's pregnant with is 6 months old. So basically in this episode, you can see that she has all of the control. She gets mad at him for not loving her enough since he's saying that he can't, like, produce children anymore. And so you can see her taking control of the situation. First of all, she's working. Second of all, she is taking care of the kids that she's having. And then she still has to have them. And that's work within itself. And so that in that episode, you can see, and since, like I said, it takes place in Naples, you can see the economy there is different than what we see in the next episodes that I'll talk about. But the economy there is a little bit poorer. You can see in the way that Adelina is dressed, and also her kids. You can see that they live in, like, a one-bedroom apartment as well. So that is the first part in which we see that the woman takes control, but she still has to do household tasks and still has the responsibility of taking care of a large family, which is common to cities like Napoli. In the second episode, we see a complete drift. So now we're in Milan. If you think Milan, you think, you know, all of the high fashion brands have stores there. Starbucks just opened up their only coffee shop in Italy there. So it's a place of a lot of prosperity in terms of financials. And in Milan, the name of the character, who is still played by Sofia Loren, like I said, is named Anna. And in Milan, Anna is wealthy. She has, you know, she's dressed to the nines. Her hair is done really well. She's wearing makeup. She's just wealthy, what you would imagine as a wealthy woman. And but she's bored. With all her money, has nothing to do. And so she has a lover. And automatically we see that she's in control of her sexuality, just like in the way that she looks and dresses. She's also in control of who she chooses to be that lover. And his name is Renzo. And she picks him up in her Rolls Royce. So through this entire episode, we see their interactions all being in this vehicle. And just from the jump, Rolls-Royce car is obviously expensive, and just there you see all the wealth that she has. She ends up convincing him to drive the car, and suddenly a boy is standing in the road, and Renzo's forced to swerve her car to the other side to avoid hitting the boy, obviously, and he ends up crashing the car into this tractor. So the entire time she has control over the road when she's driving, she just swerves around different things, different obstacles that appear in the road. But then once it's his turn, he crashes into a tractor. And so obviously Anna gets furious and she leaves. So that's basically another way in showing that, you know, the woman is evolving. She doesn't have a family. She has a lover. She has money. And she, like, you know, she's well off. And she still can take control of her sexuality as well. And then lastly, in the third episode, the name of the character is named Mara. And she's a high-end prostitute. So now we're in Rome. And she's a high-end prostitute, and basically, as that episode evolves, she ends up capturing the attention of a man named Umberto, and he becomes infatuated by her, and like obviously likes the way that she acts, the way that she dresses, and all of that, and he. Actually, he's supposed to be, from my understanding, he's like a young priest. And so he watches her from the grandparents' roof, which is right next door to Mara. And so he decides to leave the seminary. And so that's like a whole big thing in which the woman's power has caused a man to let go of his Catholic ideals. And as we all know, religion is super big in Italy, and it's super important in terms of tradition, in terms of just like everyday life. And so that was huge for a woman to be able to take a man out of his religious beliefs. And then, and so obviously the grandparents are upset about it, but he just doesn't feel like that's his calling anymore. And Mara takes an oath. I think she says she's not going to have sex for about a week. And then and this entire time she has a lover named Augusto, who's just like upset with the whole situation, like doesn't want her over there, but wants to have sex with her, but she's taking this oath. So it's basically like, even when there's a scene where they both end up in the, like, he ends up in the bed, says, like, I'm ready for you, and she's undressing, and she looks like, she's teasing him, basically, and then she ends up being like, oh, I can, I said I would take, I wouldn't have sex for a week, and he freaks out. So basically, all of these men in every single scene are going crazy because they no longer have control. If you remember what I talked about earlier, in Naples, the man no longer has control. He just is basically a machine of producing children. And the second one, the man doesn't have control of the car, but he also, like, obviously he doesn't have as much money as Anna. And so he has to kind of conform to what she wants, what she does, her wealth, all of that. And then in the third one, the prostitute, you would assume like, oh, she's just here for money. She's going to do all of this to make herself better off. And then you immediately realize that, no, she still has ideals and values, and she still can stop herself from, like, having sex. And so that kind of raises the question back to what I was mentioning earlier about how De Sica addresses human values and ethics in this film as well. Like, there's a part in which, and I'll read this actually for you guys from a book that I was reading called, I can say it in a second, it's called Victoria de Sica, Contemporary Perspectives. It's a Howard Curl book. And he writes, As always in the Sica's comedies, a morality of human kindness is gluttonously observed. Lorraine may be a black marketeer or a call girl, but she is a good-hearted black marketeer and call girl. And if she makes a vow, she keeps it. If her attractions lead a young priest away, she puts matters right again. If an old woman, her enemy, for example, comes to her in tears, she consoles her. And so these values, even if it's not the first thing you notice and you're all there because you want to see how the woman progresses in the film in terms of, you know, as industrialization continues to be at the forefront, as you see the North progressing and the South trying to catch up, you realize that there's some underlying themes in there. And so this happens in a lot of his other films. I actually watched Bicycle Thieves as well a couple of years ago, and a father is out and about with his son and they steal a bike and all of this happens, but there's still this sense of morality that exists in there. So I would definitely encourage you guys to watch it. So that's all for today. The film, if you don't remember already, because I mean, why, I've been talking for ages, is called Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, or Oggi, Ieri, Oggi, e Domani. And it's super successful. It has won many awards. And basically, it just captures this tension of sexuality and power. Who has it? Who wants it? Who's had it before? And how do you see that progress through the film? And basically, you see also their position, the women's position in society, where they were at, where they end up, how they navigate through their communities like this. One last thing I will mention before leaving you guys to it is that the title is super important in this film. It's called Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, which I personally, and there are definitely a lot of interpretations for this, but yesterday I related to Naples and Adelina and who she was. Today I would relate to the second episode with Anna and Milan and her richness, her wealth, her sexuality, and her control. That I would say is today, and we can even still see how that permeates to today's modern day culture. And then tomorrow I related to Mara in Rome and her role as a high-end prostitute and how she kind of gets through that. And so it's interesting that in 1963 this was going on, and you can still find themes like that today in different places. I know in some countries women still have to be the caregivers for all of their kids, for their multitude of kids. But then you find in other places there's women who take full control of their sexuality and use it as a form of power over men. So it's definitely something to think about. And I know that maybe you might have needed 30 years to listen to this podcast just because we're all busy at Dickinson. But stay tuned for more podcasts. Stay tuned for different reviews. And I would say if you are even remotely interested in anything I mentioned, definitely go and watch this film. You literally will be laughing in your seat and you will learn something too. That's it, Dickinsonians. Go Red Devils. Bye.